I was just thinking while Mr. Kellers was speaking, if you know of anyone who, I'm sorry, if you have an old sermon that you jotted down after the Feast of Tabernacles in years past, you can just bring that to me and I can give that sermon on. Hope everyone is having a great Sabbath. Are you easily offended? My wife says that I am. I'm offended when I see a person with tattoos up to their neck. That offends me. I'm offended when I see a young black man walking down the sidewalk with one hand holding his pants up. And his pants are so far down that you can see his underwear. That kind of stuff offends me. I'm offended when I'm at a checkout counter. The lady has a pierced earring right here. One on her tongue, three or four in her ears. And any other place that you can't see. That bothers me. I'm offended when our government is untruthful to us. And when someone is all up in your face trying to get you to accept their ungodly ways, that bothers me. I titled the sermon, "The Trap of Satan's Offense." The Trap of Satan's Offense. In Luke 17, in verse 1, you don't have to turn there. Jesus Christ said that offenses would come. He was able to look down over 2,000 years in our day, and he was able to judge how things were going to be. And so offenses would come. He says there to his disciples, it's impossible that no offenses should come. It's impossible that no offenses should come. Webster defined this word as an act of stumbling or a cause of occasion to sin. An act of stumbling or cause of occasion to sin. Number two, something that causes an outrage. Yes, an outrage of moral and physical sense. Number four, the act of displeasing or the state of being insulted or immorally outraged. Also in that group of definitions, it says to take offense at the slightest criticism. Now, that's probably me. I try to strive to be perfect in everything, but I know I fall short. And so to take the slightest offensive criticism. Number five, the breach of a moral or social code or an infraction of a law. How about that? And so I hope that you can see why I do get offended at certain things. Now, the Strong's Hebrew and Greek dictionary puts this word this way. The Strong's Hebrew and Greek dictionary. An offense is like a trap. You've seen a little varmint running through the yard. And you put a trap out there to catch this varmint. Maybe a box with a piece of raw meat on it with a little trap stick. And so an offense is like the trap stick. It's like a snare that causes one to sin, an occasion to fall, and things that offend, a stumbling block. The New Living Translation puts it this way in there in Luke 17, verse 1, there will always be a temptation to sin. Always. The New Revised Standard Version puts it this way, occasions for stumbling are bound to come. The New International, things that cause people to sin are bound to come. And the New English Standard puts it this way, temptation to sin are sure to come. Jesus Christ was able to look down to our day and say these things. We live in such a world and time that Satan's time is almost up, and Satan is going to use every trick in his book to catch us off guard, to cause us to stumble, to get us to sin. Satan became God's greatest adversary when he tried to overthrow God's plan of salvation. And Satan does not want any of us to be in God's family. So he's going to come after us. The Apostle Peter reminds us to be self-controlled and alert. To be self-controlled and alert. Because our enemy, the devil, he prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. Satan looks for the weak Christian. I hope that's none of us. Those who are not having enough Bible study. Not praying enough. Not close to God. Don't fellowship with the other brethren. And so Peter tells us to resist him. Stand firm in the faith. That's in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Satan devoured Adam and Eve. Think about that. He devoured Adam and Eve. They got caught up in Satan's web of deceit. It's going to be all right. Eve, there in Genesis 3 verse 2, Eve quoted back to Satan the exact words that God told them. There in Genesis 3 verse 2, and the woman said to the serpent, "We may eat the fruit of the tree of the garden." There may have been apples there, or pears there, or peaches there, or bananas. We can eat all those. But the fruit of the tree, which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, "We shall not eat it, nor shall we touch it, lest we die." So she quoted back to Satan the exact words that God had told Adam and Eve to live by. But she got caught up in Satan's trap. He said there in verse 4, the serpent said to the woman, "You will not die. For God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And so Eve and Adam succumbed to Satan's trap. Just as an insect, we've seen an insect flying through the air, and there is a spider's web there. The insect flies into that spider's web, and it tries to wiggle itself free, doesn't it? The spider comes and begins to twist that insect around and around and around in its web, and then inject its poison, and the prey is trapped. And so Satan the devil used these words, "You shall not surely die, for God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be open." He used these words to get Adam and Eve trapped into his web of deceit. Again, Eve quoted the scriptures back to Satan, but she ate of the forbidden fruit. She did, and her husband who was with her. The scriptures say he was with her. She knew what God says, but she became trapped in Satan's web, and she and her husband denied God by their actions. And so Peter tells us to maintain spiritual control. To maintain spiritual control. On the website about.com, under the section of Christianity, Jack Zavandar writes this: "Samson stands as one of the saddest figures in the Old Testament. A person who started with great potential, but he squandered it on self-indulgence and sinful living. Samson's birth was a miracle. His mother was barren, but an angel appeared to her and said to her, and said that she would give birth to a son, and he was to be a Nazareth all of his life. A Nazareth took a vow to abstain from wine and grapes, to not cut his hair and beard, and to avoid the contact with dead bodies. And when Samson reached manhood, his lust overtook him. He married a Philistine woman from the pagan conquerors of Israel. And at that time, Israel was under the control of the Philistines. That led to a confrontation. Samson started killing the Philistines, the scriptures say. On one occasion, he took the jawbone of a donkey and he killed 1,000 men. And so let's pick up this story in Judges 16. Judges 16, beginning at verse 1. Now Samson went down to Gaza. This was a man of God, and he saw a harlot there. And he went in to her. And when the Gazarites were told, Samson has come here, they surrounded the place and laid wait for him all night at the gate of the city. They were quiet all night, saying, in the morning when it is day, we're going to kill Samson. Verse 3. And Samson laid low until midnight. Then he arose at midnight. He took hold of the door, the gate of the city, and the two gateposts. He pulled them up from the ground, bar and all, and he put them on his shoulders, and he carried them to the top of the hill that faced Hebron, showing his great strength, pulling up this door, the gate of the city. Verse 4, afterward it happened that he loved a woman in the valley of Soreth, whose name was Delilah. And the Lord of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, entice him and find out where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to afflict him. And every one of us will give 1,100 pieces of silver. In verse 6, and so Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lie, and with what you may be bound to afflict you. And so Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. And so the lords of the Philistines brought up to her the 7 fresh bowstrings, not yet dried, and she bound him with them. And then, now men were laying in wait. Now they were in wait in the same room. And she said, the Philistines are upon you, Samson. And so he broke the bowstrings as a strand of yarn breaks when it's touched by fire. And so the secret of his strength was not yet known. I would have been out of there. In fact, I wouldn't have went there. Verse 10. Then Delilah said to Samson, look, you've mocked me and you've told me lies, Samson. Now, please tell me what you may be bound with. So he said to her, if they bind me securely with new ropes that have never been used, then I shall become weak and be like any other man. Therefore, Delilah took new ropes and bound him with them and said to him, the Philistines upon you, Samson. And the men were laying in wait, staying in the same room, and he broke them off of his arm just like thread. Delilah said to Samson, until now, you have mocked me. You've lied to me, Samson. Tell me what you may be bound with. And he said to her, if you were to weave the 7 locks of my hair or my head into the weave of the loom. And so she wove it tightly with the batters of the loom and said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he woke from his sleep, pulled out the batters of and the webs from the loom. Then she said to him, "How can you tell me, Samson, that you love me? You've lied to me 3 times, Samson. You don't love me." Verse 16, "And it came to pass when she pestered him daily with her words, and she pressed him." She pestered him, she pressed him, and so his soul was vexed to death. And then he told her all that was in his heart and said to her, "No razor has ever come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. And if I am shaven, then my strength will leave me, and I shall become weak, and I will be like any other man." We're going to see here that he's going to get caught up in the web of Delilah's deceit. Verse 18, "Then Delilah saw that he had told her all that was in his heart. The things that protected him from all these years, he had given that secret up. And so she sent and called for the lords of the Philistines, saying, 'Come up once more, for he has told me all that is in his heart.' And so the lord of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hand. Then she lured him to sleep." I get to see her, see him now with his head laying down in her lap, and she's singing sweet nothings to him. Why are you laughing? She's singing sweet nothings to him, and he's falling asleep. He must have had a little nip of wine or two. Because he fell asleep, and they were to cut these 7 locks off of his head while he was asleep. He had to have been with a couple of nips. Then she lured him to sleep on her knees and called for a man, and he had had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. And then she began to torn him, and his strength left him. His strength left him. And then she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And just like that fly in the web, it begins to wiggle back and forth. And so Samson did the same thing. "I will go out as before at other times, and I will just shake myself free." But he was not able to shake himself free. He had given up all of his defenses. And it says here, he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. Gave up all of his defenses. Then the Philistines took him and put his eyes out. They brought him down to Gaza. They bound him with bronze fetters, and he became a grinder in the prison. However, the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaven. And now the lord of the Philistines gathered together to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god. And to rejoice. And they said, "Our God has delivered into our hands Samson, our enemies." And when the people saw him, yes, they saw him, they praised their God. For they said, "Our God has delivered into our hands our enemies and destroyed of our land and the destroyer of our land and the one whose multiplies our dead." Verse 25, "So it happens when their hearts were merry," they began to have a big party and drink, "they called Samson that he might perform for them." Can you imagine that? Performing for them. "And they called for Samson that he might perform for them. And they stationed him between the pillars. And then Samson said to the lad who held him by the hand, 'Let me feel the pillars which support the temple so that I may lean upon them.' Now the temple was full of men and women. All the lords of the Philistines were there, about 3,000 men and women on the roof watching while Samson performed. And when Samson called, and then Samson called upon the Eternal and said, "Oh Lord God, remember me, I pray. Strengthen me, I pray, just this once, oh God, that I may with one blow take vengeance on the Philistines for my two eyes." And so he called upon the God of heaven. And Samson took hold of the two middle pillars which supported the temple, and he braced himself against them, one on the right hand and one on the left. And then Samson said, "Let me die with the Philistines." And he pushed with all of his might, and the temple fell on the Lord's and all the people who were in it. And so the dead that died at his death were more than those that died during his lifetime. As a Nazarite, Samson was to be a holy man, and he was to honor God with his life to all the people that were around him. He was one of the judges of Israel. But just like so many others throughout history, Samson fell prey to the trap of Delilah's web. She lured him in to her net, and he became tangled, and he could not get untangled. And so we see here that the devil used Delilah to get to Samson. Satan will use any means he can to get to us. We've been called to be a holy people. And by the power of God, we must be ever vigilant. Samson had faith in God, but he denied God by his actions. Jack Zavada writes, "Remarkably, Samson is listed in the Hall of Fame there in Hebrews 11, honored alongside Gibeon and David and Samuel. In the last moments of his life, Samson returned to God, and God answered his prayer." But we don't want to ever go down like Samson went down, do we? No, we don't. He was caught up in Satan's offensive trap, and it cost him his very life. Jesus Christ said that it's impossible, but that offenses will come. But woe to him through whom they come. Satan, the devil, is our number one offender. What about us, brethren? Are we cognizant of Satan's devices, of Satan's tools? Are we vigilant? Are we keeping a watchful eye? Satan will use anyone or anything to catch us up. Satan tried to trip up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when Nebuchadnezzar commanded them to bow and worship before the golden image that he had set up. We live in such a nation that bows to the golden images of abortion on demand, same-sex marriages, tattoos and body piercings. God commanded the children of Israel to abstain from all these things. The golden image of using illegal drugs and partying all the time. God has been taken out of the public school. It was reported this week that someone sneezed, and the little child says, "Bless you." And she was sent to the principal's office for saying, "Bless you." God's been taken out of the schools, out of the universities. We have printed on our currency, "In God we trust," but the way of God, this nation has forgotten. There in Daniel 3 and verse 9, they spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, the lute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, and symphony with all kind of music shall bow down and worship the golden image." You've decreed that. And whosoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of the burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have set up over the affairs of the providence. By the way, King, their names are Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O King, have not paid due regards, that is, respect to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you've set up. And so today we've been asked to just stop hating. Just stop hating. Tolerate others. Just accept whatever sin, shortcomings that other people have. There in verse 13 of Daniel 3. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage, and he was in a fury, gave the command to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And so they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my God or worship the golden image which I have set up? I'm going to give you one more time." Verse 15. "Now, if you are ready at the time, when you hear the sound of the horn, the sound of the flute, the harp, the lyre, the psaltery, and symphony with all kind of music, and you fall down and you worship the image which I have set up, then good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. And who is a God who will deliver you from my hand?" In her Bible story summary at about.com Christianity, Mary Fairchild writes that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, a story of uncompromising, courageous faith in the face of death. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego determined to worship the one true God only, and thus reported to the king courageously that they stood before him as the king pressured the men to deny their God. They said, "Oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hands, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Daniel 3:13-16. And so in a furious rage, filled with pride, King Nebuchadnezzar ordered the furnace to be heated 7 times hotter than the normal. And so Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we know the story, they were bound and they were cast into the flames. The fiery blast was so hot that it killed the soldiers that escorted them into the fiery furnace. But Nebuchadnezzar, he peeped in. He peeped into the fiery furnace and he marveled at the sight he saw. Because he saw 4 men unharmed with not even a hair on their hair on their head singed or the smell of smoke on their clothes. He was marveled. Needless to say, Miss Fairchild writes, This made quite an impression on Nebuchadnezzar, who declared, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship the God of Nebuchadnezzar. Except their own God. Daniel 3, verse 28. And this, so brethren, this is the same God that we serve, the God of heaven and earth. And so Miss Fairchild concludes, thus God's miraculous deliverance of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego that day, the rest of the Israelites in captivity were given freedom to worship and protection from persecution by the king's decree. And they received the royal promotion. Isn't that a wonderful story? There in Daniel 3, verse 29, we read this. Verse 29 of Daniel 3. Therefore, I make a decree that all, that any person, nation, language which speaks anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like their God. And so we see that God is willing. God is willing. God is willing to stand with us against the offenses of Satan, the devil, if we are willing to stand with him in uncompromising obedience and being courageous in the faith. In Matthew 4, we won't turn there, but Jesus Christ gave us three absolutes that will withstand the test of times when it comes to battling Satan the devil. Number one, to live by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. That's an absolute. Satan doesn't have a defense for that. Number two, to not ever tempt the Lord our God. Satan can't break that battle wall. Number three, to worship the Lord our God and to serve him only. There's no offense that can break through those three battleground walls there. Nothing can break through the defense of these absolutes. Jesus Christ said that offenses will come. But woe to those from whom they come. And so let's look at the Olivetic prophecy here, just a few scriptures in Matthew 24. 9 through 13. Again, Jesus Christ looking down at our day. Here in verse 9, he says this. Then they will deliver you up to tribulation. Talking to the true Christians of our day. And the true Christians through the ages. And they're going to kill you. And you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. And then many will be offended, will betray one another. They're going to hate one another. Then many false prophets will arise, will rise up, and they're going to deceive many. We're in that time right now. And because lawlessness, we live in a nation where lawlessness is abounding. And the love of many is waxing cold. But he gives us some comforting words here in verse 13. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Let's take a look at this from Mark 13, 9 through 13. Mark 13, 9 through 13. Jesus Christ tells us to Watch out for yourselves. Watch out for yourselves. Peter put it this way, be self-controlled and alert. Jesus Christ puts it this way, watch out for yourselves. For they will deliver you up to council, and you will be beaten in the churches. You will be brought before rulers and kings for my sake, for a testimony to them. And the gospel must first be preached to all the nations. But when they arrest you and they deliver you up, do not worry beforehand. Don't premeditate on what you're going to say. But whatever is given to you in that hour, speak that. For it is you not speaking, but the Holy Spirit that is speaking within you. Now, brethren will betray brother to death, and a father his child. Children will rise up against their parents and cause them to be put to death. Offenses are already here, brethren. These things are already happening. Verse 13, and you will be hated by all for my sake, for my name's sake. But again, those same comforting words, but he who endures to the end. Yeah, we're going to go through hard times, but he who endures shall be saved. Let's go over to Luke 21. Luke puts a little bit different spin on this. 16 through 19. Luke 21, 16 through 19. You shall be betrayed, even by parents, brothers. Here he puts the word in relatives, and he puts the word in friends. Why? Why would they betray us? Because no one wants to see anyone different than what they are doing. They don't want to see anyone keeping the Sabbath, going to keep the Feast of Tabernacles, enjoying life because you're looking for the kingdom of God to come and Jesus Christ to return. And so they're going to hate you, put you to death. And you will be hated, verse 17, be hated by all for my name's sake. But look at these comforting words here in verse 18, but not a hair of your head shall be lost. God's going to take care of us if we, again, remain faithful to him. And verse 19, by your patience, possess your souls. It's going to get rough, but by your patience, possess your souls. We have seen an example of what can happen when we fall prey to the devil's trap and temptation. You can lose your life. And we've also seen what can happen when we stand strong and courageous in the faith. God can save you. We've been reminded of the words and tools that Jesus Christ used to overcome and defeat Satan the devil. And those same tools are available to us if we are close to God. We have to ask God for those tools. And so, brethren, as the dawn of this age draw ever closer, in a great basketball game, the best team is up by 1 point. 5 seconds left in the game. The coach calls a timeout. He designs a play. We're going to have the tallest man throw the ball into the best shooter. So you've got about 2 seconds to throw the ball in. And the best shooter has got to what? Catch and shoot. He's got to catch and shoot. So he's got about 3 minutes to catch and shoot. But the defense does not know the play of the offense. They've got a guess, haven't they? We don't know Satan's offense. Satan knows his offense. He knows when he's going to come after us. He knows how he's going to come after us. And he knows who he's going to use to come after us. He has all the tricks. And he's going to try to come after us at a time when he can catch us off guard. And so we have to look. We have to look to God's word to find the right defenses. Just like Jesus Christ did. James writes, therefore, submit to God and resist the devil. Resist the devil, submit to God, and Satan will flee. And Paul writes, now I'll quote him, that now that was in James 4, verse 7. Ephesians 4, 27 says, don't give place to the devil. Don't even give place. You see the devil coming? Get up and move. Also there in Ephesians 6:11, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. That word wiles, interesting, I looked that up this morning. It means a trick intended to ensnare or deceive. So we've been talking about that the whole time. And so he says, put on the whole armor of God. You can go back and read that sometimes, the whole armor of God there in Ephesians 6, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. And Paul wrote to the Galatians to stand fast, therefore, in the liberty whereby Christ has made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage. We've been called out of Satan's yoke of bondage, and we've been set free by the blood of Christ and by the life of Christ. And if Christ has set us free, we have God's Holy Spirit, then we are free indeed. Because Christ said, greater is he that is in us than he that is in the world. Our greatest offender is Satan the devil, and he is going to be put down in the not too distant future. He's going to be put down. He knows that he has just a short time. He's going to step up his offense on us. One of the first things that God is going to do at the return of Jesus Christ is to put down all offenses and everything that offends. And so let's make sure, brethren, that we are not offending and that we are not causing offense. And so God speed that day when Jesus Christ will return.